Gary DePaul with Unlabel Leadership. Welcome to episode 73, Brandon Rogers Creates Clarity for Teams. Here's a shout out to listeners in Egypt, Canada, and particularly Alberta, Bangladesh, and in Australia, listeners from Queensland, Victoria, the Northern Territory, New South Wales, and Western Australia. With that, let's get started. If you're part of a team that isn't as cohesive as it should be, Brendan can help. Whether as a certified coach or workshop facilitator, Brendan helps teams develop clarity and effective communication. When he's not consulting, he's the host of the podcast, The Culture of Things. In the episodes, he interviews professionals from a variety of backgrounds to talk about, you guessed it, culture. On his show, his guests will provide insight to just about anything from public speaking to diversity to kindness to self-mastery, even talking about stress and marketing, which is marketing with an S at the beginning of it. When he was working in organizations, he's been a chief operating officer, a project manager, a quality assurance manager, a service and process improvement manager, and just about anything to do with customer service. Brendan knows the challenges that teams have, and he could be a difference maker for your team. Part 1, Little Understanding of Effect. People who are part of a high-performing team tend to provide and ask for feedback from their peers. They're open with their mistakes, they're willing to learn from one another, and they're pretty honest. However, sometimes teams need something to trigger that type of trust and openness to feedback. One way of doing this is with something called a 360-degree feedback. Brendan has had one of these 360 feedback sessions, and he explains a little bit about what it is and how it affected him. Here's Brendan.
The situation that I recall most, which was really a turning point for me, was less about what somebody said. It was more about an experience I had. And that experience was back in around 2006. I'd changed companies. I'd been with a company previously to that for about 11 years, and I changed companies in 2005. The company I was with previously, I'd been managing a very large customer service unit of about 50 people, all in the one location. I moved companies and I was once again managing a large customer service team spread across locations in Australia. I became very, very interested in the whole emotional intelligence side of things and how that impacted on leaders and teams and all those behaviors and things around emotional intelligence. I actually signed up and went to an emotional intelligence course. Part of that course was actually around doing a 360-degree feedback process. It was quite a formal process, which was unbelievably impactful on me in that there was an opportunity to send out the assessment to, you know, my boss, you know, the person who was leading me, the people who I was leading, my direct team, my indirect team that were below my team leaders, then also my family and also my friends outside of work. So it was a very, very great cross-section of people that knew me in different forums. Part of the training, part of the course was obviously debriefing that 360-degree feedback process. There was so much good feedback in that I could take and think, wow, like I'm really happy about this. And I didn't really know that people felt that way about me. But there was also quite a strong element where I was disconnected. I had some self-awareness about me and my behaviors and what things triggered me or impacted me. But I had very little understanding in various situations on the impact that my behaviors and my reactions and things were having on others. Sometimes it could be as simple as I'm a fairly detail-orientated, logical, process-driven person. Off the back of that, I can get quite focused on things. That can be a strength, but the flip side and the weakness of that was, and that really came through in some of the feedback I got, that I was inflexible in some of the issues that we try and work through. You know, when there was a way that I thought that was the most correct way, I was quite stubborn around those sorts of things. And my focus meant that I was sometimes a bit aloof about what was going on around me. Some pretty strong words came through that really stuck with me. And I have that feedback document today. I've done a number of 360 sessions and I work with leaders around 360s and stuff now, but I've always kept that document. It was the first one that I did. It really gave me an unbelievable, I guess, a slap in the face. the slap in the face was a realization that what I thought, there was one level of self-awareness on the one side, which was me and what I thought and what I knew. But then the misalignment that sort of I learned and what I see a lot in leaders today is that the misalignment is that the perception that their team has on those behaviors, and there's that alignment between what the leader sees and what their person that they're leading or the group of people that they're leading sees. They're not having conversation around that, then actually you will never really be a great leader to them. You'll have elements of your leadership that will be good, but there are other parts that you just don't know about and you're not having conversations with. So it's very hard to make changes on those. You know, none of us are mind readers, are we? The impact that had on me was, again, I'm very much around self-awareness to me is a pillar of leadership. To me, it even comes before relationships because you have a strong link to your own self-awareness and you're having conversations. And once again, it doesn't need to be a formal 360 process. There's a number of ways of getting that feedback. The ability to have those conversations is just so powerful in the whole leadership journey. And if you have greater self-awareness, then it actually enables you to have much stronger relationships. And that was really what I took out of that exercise. And that just helped me, I believe, become a much better leader over the rest of my journey in life. I still learn today. I still get confronted with feedback that I think, wow, that's fantastic. But then there's also some stuff that, you know, I'm not so aware of. So it just proves that we're always learning and there's always things and there's always individuals that can take you in a different way, depending on the level of your relationship. So being aware of that is absolutely paramount in any time you're leading people.
It doesn't even have to be necessarily about you, your habits. It can be simple communication. And what I mean by that is I have a colleague of mine in Florida who does performance consulting with executive boards. And a lot of what he does is take what each person on the board perceives as being the priorities, as being the purpose, and looking at them collectively, and then finding out that in most cases that they're not on the same page. And it's so easy for that to happen where you have a board or a group of people that don't have a shared set of priorities, which it could very easily happen.
Happens all the time.
There is something you said that struck me that is a little bit different than other 360 feedbacks. And that is when you did it, it wasn't just the people you reported up to, your directs, your indirects, but it was family and friends outside of work. And it conveys two messages. One is that, especially with EQ, you don't compartmentalize yourself as work and outside of work. It's all intertwined. The value that your family and friends have as part of the process really contributes and gives some depth to what other people have to say.
Yeah, very, very much so. It was, and that in itself, and thanks for raising that, pointing it out, was another great learning experience because it really came down to the level and the quality of relationship that you had and the environments that people knew you in the workplace. And this, I think, was a trait through my own journey of work. And you know, I always saw work as a very serious place. You could have a laugh and a joke and stuff, but it was a place to get things done and to achieve things. And whatever. There's a little bit more of a serious tone where, you know, I've got a bit of a dry sense of humor and, you know, quite sarcastic, a bit of a laugh and a joke in my friends and family. And so it was almost like there was two people being assessed. I never felt like I was a different person, but the way I behaved and the way I looked at things in the environment of work was actually quite different to how I had the environment outside of work. So that was also another real learning experience that reinforced the environment we're in and the situation that we may play out in our head and how we may act in certain situations and the behaviors we show and the level of relationship we have with people, that people know you at a certain level compared to maybe people in the workplace that you still spend a lot of time with, but we don't always take the time to really get to know people, which is wrong. We should. And that's a core part of leadership, actually understanding and, you know, helping people feel that they matter as real people. And that's another thing that I learned over the time is break down the serious boundaries a bit and actually be a real person.
So true. Definitely. One other thing that's really interesting is the congruency with how you or how we interact with groups of people. And what I mean by that is how you interact with your boss, how you interact with your direct reports, how you interact with internal customers, how you interact with external customers can be slightly different. It's so easy that you could have a boss lose it, so to speak, or talk down to a direct report, which is sad when it happens, but would that same boss do that to his boss or her boss? And just having that congruency.
Yeah. And again, I've been in situations where it's the person that I've reported to in a corporate setting has had various behaviors and 80% of the time were fine, but there was that sort of 10, 20% of time, which wasn't fantastic. And the pressure and the stress that put on you as well, and you weren't quite sure how they were going to react in situations. that also changed me. So the impact that the leader has, and I even recently interviewed somebody on one of my on my own podcast a while ago, and they used a figure that whatever the behavior is that the leader's showing, the impact of that behavior is actually tenfold. So if they come in and they're quite upset and a bit cranky, well, the people around them are feeling that 10 times the amount. Again, that's a really impactful situation. And I think if leaders probably were more aware of that and understood that, maybe they would take the breath that they need to take from time to time and just calm the situation, be a bit, little bit more self-aware, and then deal with things in a different way. The impact and the negative impact that that can have on teams and people within teams can be long-lasting. Very hard to get back some ground on some of those situations.
Definitely. Emotion is contagious.
Very much so.
Part 2, to the principal's office. In my book, Nine Practices of 21st Century Leadership, I talk about 26 leadership beliefs. One of those is influence comes from all directions. You don't know where influence can come from, where you can find help, where you can find insight, where you can find that innovative idea that you really need. It can come from a peer, it could come from a regular employee, it could come from someone who's on the support staff, or even a customer. In this story, Brandon describes something his son did that was a gift of feedback. Here's Brandon with his story.
I have two adult children. I have a daughter who's 21 and a son who is 18. I'm very, very proud of them and they're making their way in the world. A really proud moment for me was actually with my son, and he was in his final year of high school, which was only last year. He was at a school that he'd been since 2013. It was a startup school and it was a sporting school. He's very big into his football, into his soccer. He started off really well, and for quite some time he was really happy there. But I guess as time went on, he became less happy. The program that he was in on the football side, he felt wasn't as good as what it could be. And there were a lot of promises made as far as what they were doing and developing on the education side and on the sporting side. And things just weren't going in the direction that he thought they should. And us as parents at the school actually didn't think as well. And I actually had an opportunity to work at this place for a while. I thought, well, I stopped my consulting period for a time. They were a client. I worked with them for a couple of years to see if I could actually contribute to helping turn some of this around. What happened was that he'd got to a point in year 12, early in year 12, where he was just fed up. I guess the bad side is that he allowed things to fester too much, and it was sort of a last resort. But he actually, I like to think, and we have debriefed a number of times, and he listens, doesn't always say a lot, but listens to some of the work that I'm doing with people. And he booked a time with the principal and wanted to meet with him. So this is a 17-year-old kid, and meeting with a reasonably experienced principal of this school, who was actually the founder of the school. It took him a little while to sort that out, but he got there. We didn't put words into his mouth. We just said, you know, make sure you've got your facts sorted out and some key points that you want to get across to share about your own experience at the school. He spent about an hour with the principal. We weren't in that conversation. He did that completely on his own. He was absolutely emotionally drained by the end of it because obviously the buildup of that experience over several weeks, he was in tears after it. He felt like he hadn't been heard. He hadn't been listened to. But just the strength and the courage of a 17-year-old boy to go to a principal, book some time, first of all, and lead into this and spend some time in his own words, sharing his own experience at the school because he wanted to make it better. He was the one of only two students that was at the school since day one that was still at the school. The other student was the principal's son. So there was nobody else at that school that was there from day one that still believed in the school enough for the child to still be there. He stuck it through, but I was unbelievably proud of him in what he did. Because again, working in a school, there is, whether we like it or not, there's a natural power imbalance. There's the teachers and the principal and that, and there's the students, and it's sort of men and women versus boys and girls, not in a negative way, but it's just a natural power imbalance. So if you think about that situation, I'm dealing with it regularly in the work that I do. You would understand it in the work that you do and would have seen it. There's so many people out there that there's not always that natural power imbalance. Sometimes it could be peer on peer, but people will often not have the conversation with each other about providing feedback. You know, we always have this negative connotation around feedback. It's not that. Feedback is just feedback. It's an opportunity to improve, and you know, you can take it on board and you can unpack it and do something with it, or you can unpack it and throw it in the bin and do nothing. It's your choice. But the courage that that takes for a student to do that and to share to basically show those sort of leadership qualities to have a conversation like that was just first class in my book, given that there's so many adults in the workspace that just shy away and don't have those conversations. And they'd sooner leave an organization rather than have the real conversations. So that was my example that I just wanted to share, that very, very impactful for me, and just reinforce the, I think sometimes society has less confidence in the young people of today. I've worked with and coached some fantastic young people and so many out there, and I think we underestimate the abilities that these young people can have and how they can actually give us some inspiration to do some things that we don't always do well ourselves.
In corporate America, the people in authority, meaning managers, directors, VPs, managers of people, they have a lot of influence over the amount of feedback that is shared. If they make it clear to people that they welcome feedback and encourage it and show that it's safe for employees to provide that feedback, it makes such a big difference. And the first time that someone gives feedback, if that person in authority shuts it down or doesn't do anything, that becomes a crucial moment in what will happen in the future. Or if that person in authority accepts the feedback and actually acts upon it, then that crucial moment helps build that culture of feedback.
Gary, absolutely. And this phrase, culture is a reflection of leadership. If the leader has the vulnerability and actually encourages and creates environments where he or she welcomes feedback, that is a fantastic foundation for so many good things moving forward, because they can be talked about, they can be open about stuff. That vulnerability, as we know, there's lots of research, there's lots of great people out there that do some fantastic work about vulnerability-based trust and things like that. Nothing creates a stronger bond of trust than being vulnerable with each other.
Definitely.
You know, a 17-year-old boy doing that with an adult, you know, a very powerful position within school. And what happened from that was, again, it took that one student with the courage to show those leadership qualities. And he wasn't even part of the official leadership team. Some of the actions that happened showed that the principal did listen to his credit. I don't know where things are at now because, again, we're outside of the school. He's finished up, but there were some changes internally. There were some conversations that happened in amongst the senior class of that year group, and more people had a voice. More people opened up about their own experiences. Some have been there for longer times than others, but it just created a little bit of a catalyst for change. I'm not sure if it created a catalyst for long-term change, but there were some changes that happened in that immediate time for that year group, which was very powerful. And it just meant that, again, my son had an opportunity to have an impact in his sort of last year of the school and create some positive change for people. And officially, he wasn't even a leader. So that just, once again, reinforces to me, you do not need to have a title to be a leader.
Absolutely. You talked about how that experience before talking with the principal was affecting your son that built up to this. How do you think that has affected his life afterwards?
What I saw in the moment and what I see now is that I wouldn't say it's two different people, far from it, but just the confidence that it gave him in doing something like this and then being able to have other conversations with people in his own year group. Actually, people started to look up to him in his year group because he'd done such a step like that. So it gave him an element of confidence. He felt more respected because he'd done something about it. And that just came through in everything he did, the way he presented himself, the way that he showed up in the world. Not that he was showing up terribly before, but there was just a slightly different presence around him. And it just gave him confidence that, you know, like, that's a pretty tough thing. And I think it's the same for all of us. There's things that happen in our lives that we should always look back on and think, you know, that was a really tough moment. If I can do something like that, then that gives me strength to do the next thing that I'm finding challenging. That's what we saw in him.
I think you're right with your son in building confidence. The fact that he was able to say this, there wasn't this negative consequence afterwards where something terrible happened. Once you go through that a few times, it makes it easier to voluntarily provide feedback to the people around you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Something I thought of now, actually, with his own football, and he plays at a representative level sort of north of where we live. So a fair bit of travel involved and stuff. And he's given feedback to one of his coaches around, you know, the coach, to his credit, was asking for, they hadn't had a great start to the season and, you know, had some sessions with the players and what's working, what's not working. Once again, you know, my son Lockie was the first person to stand up and say, hey, this is what I think we're working well and this is what I think's not. And maybe you as a coach is this and that. And it was, again, just the offshoot of that one pivotal moment in him having the courage to have that initial conversation back in early part of last year. That is a catalyst, and to me, a fantastic catalyst for so many events and possibilities that may happen in the rest of his life. Because again, he's only 18 now, so hopefully he's got a lot of good years ahead of him.
When I was at my last company, I was given a manager. He was a consultant who's not used to working in a corporate setting, having direct reports. Mm. For whatever reason, it was a very stressful experience with him. And I was actually having anxiety attacks because of how he conducted himself. And I finally, one day, just sat down with him and I just told him how his behavior was affecting me, how I've never experienced this with other managers. And 2 days later, I was laid off.
Wow.
It was definitely just terminating me by eliminating my position. Couldn't fire me because of performance.
Mm.
Even though that was a negative experience, it actually was a positive experience because it got me out of that situation and kicked me off to writing a leadership book and some other things.
Wow, yeah.
It gave me the courage to give feedback.
Mm.
Just be more open to doing that regardless of the consequences. This is just so fantastic about your son and what he went through. I can envision if he's working for someone and the person says, hey, I'd like to get some feedback, that hand will go up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I can definitely resonate with what you're saying. And it's a shame that it happened, but you know, you're the sort of person that's turned that into a strong positive, obviously. I'm a big believer that most people don't wake up in the morning thinking, you know, wanting to do a bad job. And, you know, I believe that heavily around leaders. It's not that leaders want to be terrible leaders or managers or whatever you want to call them, but it doesn't mean that they're always open to the feedback. You know, maybe the level of humility is not quite there that needs to be there, but they just don't get up in the morning and think, I can't wait to be the worst leader that I can be today. I think if we fundamentally have that belief, then I know that's something I always bring back to my own thing when I was involved in corporate positions and stuff, and give myself some courage to maybe have a conversation if something's not quite right. But also it's not about the situation where, you know, just picking up on the maybe what's not working. We've got to be really deliberate about situations that are really positive and provide that feedback as well. Because again, I'm not a believer in, you know, positive, negative feedback. It's just feedback. And sometimes it's positive and sometimes there's some other opportunities for improvement in that feedback.
I love sharing that perspective of people waking up in the morning. They don't usually say, how can I make people around me miserable? I mean, that's
they do. That's a real worry, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I love it.
Part 3, formative evaluation. In 2008, Ajay Pankhagar, along with Terry Kirkwood, edited a book called The Trainer's Portable Mentor. In that book, Don Kirky, who also has been on the show, and I authored a chapter called Formative Evaluation, Getting It Right the First Time. Formative evaluation, it's just a fancy way of saying getting feedback to strengthen the design of whatever you're doing. If you're part of a team, you can use formative evaluation, some of the techniques, to really get at ways to strengthening how the team works and interacts and works together. Brendan shares some advice on one way that you can do formative evaluation to improve a team. Here's Brandon.
I have to link it back to the first part we spoke about in that 360 and self-awareness piece. And once again, we don't need to employ a consultant like me or go and sign up to some expensive review platform. There's three things that you can really do straight away. If you're leading a team, you can gather your team and you can do some preparation beforehand as a leader. And the three questions are, what should I start doing? What should I stop doing? And what should I keep doing? In my experience, those three things are just so powerful. I always like to suggest to the leader and the groups that I work with is that, you know, there's some pre-work in that. So it might be that, okay, in the session, 20 minutes, team gets together and just sit down and reflect on the leader and have a conversation around what are three things that you'd like the leader to start doing? What are the three things that you want the leader to stop doing? And what are the three things you want the leader to keep doing? And then I get the leader to also do that separately. As a leader, what do you think the team is going to ask you to start doing, to stop doing, to keep doing? Then we have a conversation around that. Sometimes there's alignment. Sometimes there's quite a lot of misalignment. But what it does is create the opportunity and again, the vulnerability that the leader needs to show, which again, continues to develop trust, creates such a strong bond within the group and the genuine conversations that can start to happen from that. You don't need to be leading people to be doing that. You don't need to be officially in a leadership role or a management role. It might be that you're working with a peer and you may want to have that conversation together and say, hey, I'd really like to get some feedback from you. We're working together. You know, what would you like me to start doing, stop doing, keep doing? And you can have that conversation and you can do that exercise yourself. What do you think the person you're asking will ask you to start doing, stop doing, keep doing? it just creates the opportunity for fantastic conversation, creates the opportunity for alignment around some self-awareness of me and what some others perceive about my own level of self-awareness and bringing that together. If you can do that and then work on the areas that team or the individual feels that you need to work on, then you're on an improvement path, aren't you? And you are going to be naturally become a better leader if you take the right actions to close the gaps in the alignment or in the misalignment that may be there.
I've helped quite a few individual contributors just do that, do a 360.
Mm.
They didn't have anyone reporting to them. You lead from the perspective of your role. And if you just have interactions with other human beings, you have an opportunity to do a 360, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I didn't say, which I was remiss of me and should reinforce, this is focused around behaviors. It's not about the technical side of things. It's always around behaviors because all of the time, it's a behavior that is impacting something, someone first and foremost. So we focus on behaviors, getting those behaviors right or aligned with each other, and then the rest will just follow.
Talk about behaviors, not talk about labels.
Absolutely.
There's also one other element that I would throw in there. When you're brought in to do this, to help someone with the 360 where you gather the team and you have them think about this, do the pre-work, there's an implicit message that you're giving, or maybe you make it explicit, where the person that has brought you in to help with this, that person is saying, I want to better myself. And I give you, people who report to me and work with me, I give you permission to speak openly and honestly so I can learn and grow because I want to change and evolve. And the fact that you're there helping that person helps to convey that message, whether directly stated or not.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So it does bring that, I guess, element of goodwill. And again, we've used this word vulnerability again. The real power though is if nothing comes of that, then that goodwill can deteriorate quite quickly. So the action that comes from that is really important, that a leader is always following up and you know, asking the team or the individual, or if it's a peer-to-peer, the feedback session, that they're keeping each other accountable and supporting each other. It's supporting each other always from an element of development, learning, improving. We have that mindset and we know that we feel that we care enough about the individual to want to give them feedback and want to help them improve, then we're always coming from a good place and our intent will always be the right intent. If we don't have the right intent, that's when feedback sessions become quite dangerous because you're getting into the office politics sort of stuff and the lack of humility areas. And that's a really quick way to erode people in teams and working together as teams.
I think setting up really the intent and the purpose can change it from something that can go sideways to a really positive experience.
Absolutely. I should also say this is where the experience facilitator or consultant, whatever, is really worth their weight in gold. You know, doing these sorts of things and just not having some awareness, some situational awareness, some team awareness in the group and the level of relationships, you know, an exercise like that can go pear-shaped. So it's not about just, you know, chucking a whole group of new people together and thinking you can start like that. Now, there's some things that we need to do to build some levels of vulnerability to develop some relationships before doing that. So I share this sort of takeaway on the proviso that people have some sort of relationship with each other. You know, so there's a starting point there that actually the opportunity to be vulnerable and be open and to share some things. There's a foundation of having worked together for some period of time already.
My thanks to Brendan Rogers. If you'd like to learn more about Brendan, go to the show notes. And if you have a comment or question, go to unlabeledleadership.com. Click the message icon. You can leave a voicemail message up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who contribute to the show. Your contributions make a difference because this is a volunteer service. Mostly, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, lead on!